We are continuing our study on creating community in the church, and we looked last Wednesday kind of at these four, or a couple of these areas, and these are some of the main areas that we're looking at for this study, and these responsibilities that we have. We talked about our responsibility towards God and loving God with a heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourself, and those kind of two commandments of how that plays into creating community. And those kind of things are responsibilities that we have towards God and towards our neighbor. And then we talked about those one another concepts that we looked at last Wednesday, our responsibility to our brothers and sisters here. And we're going to look at some kind of an aspect of responsibilities we have toward ourselves, but also towards our brother and sister tonight. But I want to kind of finish off what we were talking about last time. These are these concepts we were talking about. And if we're doing these things, like if everybody's doing these things towards one another, that creates that atmosphere that we're looking for in here. The idea of talking about creating community inside the congregation is an idea of making sure that we're all on the same page of what the expectations we should have of one another. Have you ever heard somebody talk about healthy expectations? There are certain healthy expectations that we should have of one another, and these are it. These are responsibilities we have one towards another. These are not only expectations, but commandments from God that we should be practicing these things towards one another. And if we're doing that, this should be just an awesome place, right? We should be like, it's a small world kind of thing at Disney, right? It should just be perfect. Everything's awesome when we're all doing these things. However, to err is human, right? We make mistakes. I'm not going to ask you to raise hands, but I've made a mistake before, okay? I can speak for myself. I've made a mistake on some of these before and had to own up to said mistake. And so in doing that, we're going to talk about a few things, but I want to look at some passages in Colossians. We didn't go through Colossians chapter 3. If you ever get a chance and it's like, what should I study today? Read Colossians chapter 3. It's a great chapter. Whenever I'm going to a congregation for the first time, and especially some places, I teach Colossians chapter 3 because there's a lot there about us as a like a church, how we work. But even in the letter itself, Paul talks to them about having the church in Laodicea, at least, having been knit together in love. How many of you have a quilt? Patchwork quilt. How many of you have those? I have some really old ones that are handed down. Do y'all have some of those? They're starting to turn colors now. That's just how they do. And the intricate, pieces, like the individual patches on those things aren't as pretty as the combination of all of them together, right? Would you agree that you've seen those individual patches? It's like, well, mine has really pretty patches. Whatever. But you get the idea that together they're better. And they create something together. Individually, they're just scraps, but together, they are knit together. And that's the kind of imagery here that Paul uses. He wasn't thinking of quilts necessarily, but this concept that being knit together. And he also talks about us, or the congregation there, being knit together out of, what does this passage tell us about the congregation in Colossae? Was it a monocultural group of people? Yes, being renewed in the true knowledge. Did they come from one culture? Their backgrounds, did they come from all the same culture and were blended into the one? No, very much not. They all came from various backgrounds, but they are renewed, and that's what that whole chapter is talking about. Putting on Christ and what it looks like to be renewed in a true knowledge of Christ. Because of those things, they were able to come together into one group. But if you look at these groups, Greeks, Jews, circumcised, uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, freeman, but all in all. Can we see that group of people together? And the reason why they were able to come together is because they have been knit together in love. That whole chapter talks about kind of the same things we talked about last week. It would be redundant to go through that chapter. But I wanted us to look at this and recognize that before we jump into what we're talking about tonight, This is what we're supposed to have. This is what we're supposed to do towards one another. And we're going to talk about something where it's not going to be comfortable. We're talking about an uncomfortable thing tonight, but this is the end result of that uncomfortable thing. We will have to go through, we will go through some of these things when you're coming together and blending into, out of all these groups, blending into one culture, blending into one community, you're going to go through some things, and you're going to go through conflict. Conflict happens, okay? You've heard me say this before, in jest, but quasi-seriously, where two or three are gathered in, together in my name, there will be drama, all right? We, as human nature, things happen, okay? Things happen. You didn't eat a sandwich today, and you got hangry, and you said some things you probably shouldn't have. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, right? We've all been there, okay? So we're going to talk about this. Tonight we're going to be very real about it and being open and honest. And what does the Bible say about these things? Talk about conflict as we go through this, and then get into some nuts and bolts of conflict. But when things that are working against us, when conflict happens, human nature is working against us. Because when conflict happens, what do we initially want to do? What's that? What's the knee-jerk reaction for some of us whenever?
Fight or flight,
right? So maybe you're in the fight mode, right? I'm going to stand my ground, right? I won't back down, Tom Petty. You know, like, I'm going to be here, right? But then there's others that are like, I'm flying, I'm leaving, I'm not going to be around at all. I will take the ostrich approach. So those things work against going through conflict in a healthy way. How about wrong examples? Where do we learn how to deal with conflict? Parents? Siblings? Maybe. What are some other areas that we learn to deal with conflict? I'm sorry? Media, work, maybe there's the culture at work and things that are around. We deal with conflict. That's just how it's done. That's just how we do things around here. Well, not necessarily. Yes, sir?
Results.
Results can teach us. Either way, right? Results can teach us. If it works, yeah. And sometimes it worked for me, right? Sometimes the results are, it worked for me. I got what I wanted out of it. It's fine, right? That might not be what we're shooting for, I got what I wanted out of it. Do our emotions, or does anger get in the way sometimes? Maybe a little bit. Because a lot of times conflict has within it the idea that it's dealing with me. It's a very personal thing. You know, it's frustrating when somebody goes through a conflict with somebody and says, well, it's nothing personal. It is entirely personal, right? That's right up there with just calm down. Those are two very effective ways of getting things over with, right? That works, right? No. Yes, yes. That's like gasoline on the fire. Just calm down. Mm-hmm. Yep, not going to work. All right, so anger and emotion can be counterproductive in dealing with this. And these are things, if we recognize them, they can help, right? Because you know if somebody says something and you feel that little, you know what I'm talking about, that emotion that's there. You know it's there, right? That's not the sin. It's what you do next that becomes the issue. Yes, ma'am, that's exactly right. Angry and sin not. What about misconceptions of meekness? What do we say about meekness? What is... can be weak. Well, I got to be meek. I can't say anything. Oh, it's not my place. Then yes, you become the doormat. You become, everybody just kind of walks all over you because you're not going to stand up and say something. I'm going to say a lot for myself. It took a lot for me to learn how to be assertive, that I can be assertive and be a Christian and it's fine, right? You will have to be your own advocate. Nobody will know you are offended unless you do what? You say, I have an issue here. It is completely healthy and normal and right for us to say those things. How we do it depends a lot on things, but it is right for us to say something. And misconception of meekness is, well, I just can't say anything. I just gotta take it. I gotta turn the other cheek and turn the other cheek. until I have no jowls left, right? No, that is not how this works, okay? So we'll deal with some of this. Fear of conflict, this is the ostrich approach. You know what I mean by the ostrich approach? What does an ostrich do? Head in the sand, right? And it goes away. If I don't see it, it goes away, right? We do that a lot with other things too. If I don't read the credit card statement, maybe it's not there, right? So no, this goes away. It just goes away. So fear of conflict doesn't resolve anything. It actually will compound things because it gets into this, into bottling it up. We don't deal with it. We bottle it up. What happens? Vesuvius eventually happens, right? Pompeii, Mount St. Helens. Those kind of things happen eventually at like the slightest little thing, right? It wasn't that one little thing, you know, the proverbial straw. It wasn't that one little thing, and then like you emotionally blow up on somebody. And you're like, I asked for a paperclip, right? You know, and so, you don't respond in kind necessarily. So that's not healthy, right? Those are things that work against us. We think, well, I'm dealing with it. Oh, I'm dealing with the conflict. I'm dealing with the conflict. Are you really? No, you're not. And bottling, and then eventually it does seep out. It's a pressure cooker kind of scenario, and it will seep out. So what does the Bible say about it? What do? We go to Scripture and give us wisdom about these things. We're going to look at a few passages here. Look over Matthew chapter 5, Matthew 5 and Matthew 18. And this kind of looks at it from two different sides of the conflict. In Matthew 5, you have one side of this conflict, Matthew 5, 23. Therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar and there, remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go first be reconciled to your brother, then come and present your offering. In this case, a conflict or a situation that you remember you have with somebody interferes with our worship with God. It interferes this relationship with my fellow man, interferes with my relationship with God. That should be an important thing for us to like think about in dealing with conflict. So this is one side of it. This is somebody who has offended. This is the offendee recognizing or remembering, oh, I did something wrong. I need to go and make sure this thing is reconciled. Look over in Matthew 18. What do we see from this side? Whose perspective? Matthew 18, beginning of verse 15. All right, so if somebody sins against you, if your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. Now, look at this process. Go and show him this fault. Go show him what's going on. Talk to him in private. Who are we supposed to talk to when there's an issue, when there's a conflict? What's that? Directly to that person. Now, what do we do from time to time? I say we, like it's other people, not anybody in here. We talk, who do we go and talk to? We go and talk to that person right away? We talk to everybody else. What do we start doing? You got people on your team, right? Oh, you're so right. They were doing this, we're doing this. Then you build up this whole case against them, and you build up this. What we do is we vilify that person before we've ever had a chance to even talk to them. And maybe you've been on either side of this, the receiving end of this, or maybe you've done it. And once you've actually talked about the situation, it was a complete misunderstanding. What you thought they did on purpose, for sure they did it on purpose, it was a complete accident. They had no idea that they had said anything or done anything. And we build this whole case against them, and you get other people mad at them, and you start creating division, and you start creating issues, and you destroy the community that we're trying to create. Is that a good thing to do? No, it's not a good thing to do. So that's why the Bible says, go to them and talk to them in private. Give them opportunity to save face. Because you're not wanting, if you want what's best for your brother, sister, and you want what's best for you, you don't want everybody to know about it. You want to address this issue, and you address it. But if they don't address it, or it's not addressed in a certain way, or there's some reason you guys cannot communicate, bring some people who are privy to the information, a few people, maybe a mediator, maybe somebody can come in and talk about this. And if that still doesn't resolve it, go to the elders. And if it becomes a huge issue, a church splitting, big issue, elders will know if it's appropriate to go before the congregation. But this is a process. And I will tell you from personal experience, this works, not just in the church. This works. This is a great interpersonal way of dealing with conflict. You use it at work. Try it at work. It is really, really effective in dealing with things. So this is something that we need to look at. So in a perfect world, all things being perfect, which we know we don't live in, but in a perfect world, the offender and the offendee would meet in the middle, right? Neath that old Georgia pine kind of thing, right? And resolve the issue. And so the Bible is teaching from both sides, right, to deal with things if we're willing to listen and do what's right. Again, we're wanting what's best for the other person and for ourselves in this situation. It alleviates a lot of stress and anxiety if you deal with it quickly. Look over in Luke chapter 17. Luke 17. These are words in red. Be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. If he sins against you 7 times a day and returns to you 7 times saying, I repent, think about it. No, forgive him, right? And this is that idea. But if your brother sins against you, or if your brother sins, rebuke him. Jesus says, you need to talk to this person. Jesus says, talk to him. Now, is it easy to do this? No, it's not, because what happens? Why is it not easy? What keeps us from doing these things? What keeps us from the emotions that are involved in it? What else? What's that? Fear. What's going to happen? The result going to be? Is it going to change the relationship? And when we deal with that, the relationship's already changed, right? The relationship's already changed. How are they going to respond to the information? What are some other things? Pride, our own pride, maybe their pride, and dealing with it. It's uncomfortable. Is it uncomfortable?
Or we're sitting around waiting for them to come to us first.
Maybe I'm sitting around waiting for them to come to me. Well, they're supposed to come to me because Matthew 5, right? But maybe they don't know, right? The Matthew 5 was in the case when they, they knew, but maybe they don't know that they have offended, and you need to, you know. Yes, well, time heals all wounds. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. They scab over, but it doesn't heal all wounds. So it is something that maybe we need to address. And it's uncomfortable, but it says rebuke your brother. You know, go to them and talk to them about what's going on. Jesus says you need to deal with the issue because it will continue to fester. We'll talk about that later on. So words in red about dealing with these things. James chapter 1. James chapter 1. This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Now, what advice is this giving us about conflict resolution? What is James saying here about conflict resolution? What's that? Be quiet, right? What's that? Think first. Now, have you ever acted like knee-jerk reaction to something, and that knee-jerk reaction was probably not the best option? Not just me? Okay. So we act without engaging the brain, and later on your brain's like, why did we do this, right? Why? We just made it more difficult for ourselves. So, and a lot of times in conflict resolution, and it may depend on the scenario, but slow down, think, pray, ponder this maybe if you have the time to do it. Quick to hear, observe. What's going on? This is why my mom said you had 2 ears and 1 mouth, right? Listen more and talk less. And this is, in this case, slowing down and listening really listening. Because somebody's saying something to you, and you're already angry, what are you thinking of right in that moment? Not what they're saying. They just went all like, wah, 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 wah on you, and you've got your argument. Like, you're not even listening to what they're saying. I've been in a room where somebody said something, you know, and was, you know, making an apology, but the other person wasn't even hearing it, wasn't even hearing the apology, because they had already said in their mind what they thought was supposed to happen in a certain way, and they weren't listening to the words coming out of the mouth of the other person. And so it is important that we slow down, slow to speak, and slow to anger, because our anger, as much as we like to hide behind it and use it as a battering ram and get stuff done, I worked for a boss that he just got angry and mad at everybody and got stuff done. That was his leadership role or skill. It was not a fun place to be. And so that is not, I might get my way, but you did not create a healthy environment, right, in doing that. You've isolated everybody in that case. Ephesians chapter 4 also has some light, shed some light on this. Ephesians 4:26. Be angry, yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. So the anger is not the issue. It is what you do with that anger. Be angry and sin not. And deal with that anger as soon as possible. Deal with that anger while there's time to think about it. Yes, sir? No, it does not. Did y'all were able to hear that? It's the idea that where, you know, Matthew 18 is something that maybe it's a sin if we don't do that, and we allow a conflict, we allow a situation to snowball and fester into something that could have been stopped, could have been dealt with if it hadn't been nipped in the bud like it should have been. And so it's very important that we consider these things. These are for our benefit, for our good, that we do these things. And, you know, sometimes the conflict isn't good. But I will tell you this, and this will fast forward to the end. A relationship that's gone through conflict and resolved it is better after, is stronger after. A relationship that has conflict, because every relationship has conflict, a relationship that has conflict and never deals with it is always weaker for it. There's always excuses, always something else. So there's a relationship that's gone through conflict and been able to deal with it in a healthy way and come out in a healthy way, it can be stronger for it. And so that's important for us to think about that. That was something that I neglected to think about, was that the health benefits, the growth benefits from dealing with conflict in a healthy way. Yes, sir? Yes. If we don't trust what God has given us, or his information about dealing with conflict, yeah. Yes. Yeah, yes, yeah, we've all had those conversations with ourselves about why we don't need to go talk to them, and we're actually going to, you're an excellent student, we're going to get to that in just a moment in dealing with some of these things, but it's important for us to think about this and our responsibilities and what happens if we don't, and like you said, what happens if we don't trust God in this. In Galatians, we have an interesting kind of scenario take place. Galatians chapter 2, there was a bit of conflict. Do y'all remember the key players in Galatians 2? Paul and Peter. But when Cephas, Peter, came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to coming to us of certain men of James, from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles, but when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. Now, there are those who believe, the party of the circumcision, that you still had to be circumcised and follow certain practices to be a Jew, those who came from James, those who came down from Jerusalem. So the rest of the Jews joined him in the hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas, son of encouragement, right? Even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. Oh, well, we don't actually eat with them. We let them be part of the church, but they started doing that kind of stuff with the Jews or with the Gentiles. But when I saw they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas in the presence of all, if you being a Jew live like the Gentiles and not like the Jews, How is it that you compel the Gentiles to live like Jews? Why do you make them live in a way that you're not even living yourself, is what he's saying. Now, he did this in front of everybody because it needed to be nipped in the bud. This was a congregational issue. It was affecting, it was already out in the open. This was no longer a private affair because it was all out in the open. And so it needed to be addressed right away in this thing. It wasn't like he could just take Peter aside and say, Peter, Cephas, this isn't cool. It needed to be dealt with in front of everybody because it was an everybody thing. It was already affecting everybody. And so it was dealt with. In that moment, it was dealt with the way it needed to be dealt with. And so he was stood unto his face. And sometimes there may be in certain situations where that needs to be the case. In chapter 6 of Galatians, verse 1, brethren, if anyone is caught up or caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. This is kind of an idea, a concept that, yes, we're going to deal with conflict, and yes, we're going to be dealing with things. Some things are going to be spiritual things, and we're dealing with spiritual practices, maybe that somebody isn't handling correctly, and we're dealing with a certain situation where somebody has wronged you, but always with a spirit of what? Gentleness and love for my neighbor, love for my brother, wanting what's best for them in the outcome as well, not just trying to get what's best for me, not just trying to get them to own up necessarily, and that sometimes we put parameters on it that don't need to be there, but restore such a one with gentleness and making sure that I, in this process, am not doing anything to wrong or doing anything that I am, you know, should be very careful how I'm handling it, that I will not be tempted to do something similar. So Galatians gives us some information here as well. Look over in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. There's an interesting scenario took place in Galatians or 1 Corinthians chapter 6. So we're not going to take time to read this whole section here, but what in the gist of it, what was happening? What was happening in this congregation? What were they doing? They were suing, or they're taking people to court for things that were happening in the church. And Paul's like, what in the world? Why are you dealing with spiritual things? Why are you, who are spiritual, who should have a higher understanding and wisdom of things than public courts, taking your brother to court? Do we need, when dealing with conflict, to take it outside somewhere else? No, we don't need to do that. We need to deal with it in-house. These are things that we need to deal with in-house. And this, I'm not saying necessarily just inside the congregation, but maybe in our own family, maybe in our own unit, that we're not dealing with these things and just letting everybody know about what's going on. In this case, he says, you have people in the church. Don't you have somebody wise enough in the church to handle it? And that's another thing. If there's a situation that has arisen and there's a certain amount of conflict and I don't know how to handle it, can we go to somebody who has the wisdom? Maybe our elders, maybe somebody we trust that has the wisdom to deal with the situation, and they can be an arbiter, they can help in dealing with the conflict. Maybe I don't trust myself to deal with it in a way I should. It has affected me so much. I need somebody to help me walk through these steps, to help me with this. And yes, and that's the case. We need maybe there are certain circumstances where this is the case. This is what, but I don't bring it outside the church. I don't take it outside the unit that it needs to be resolved in. And in this case, we don't need to take our spiritual matters and put them in front of a public affair. That's not something that needs to be done. But in conflict, we need to be recognizing as well that we don't wrong or defraud. But rather, he said, it's better to just be wronged. It's better to just be defrauded than it is to make sure you take your brother to court. And so in certain circumstances, maybe I'm going to deal with this issue and I'm going to allow myself, maybe it involves money and I loaned money to somebody or lent money to somebody and they didn't pay me back. I'd rather just let it go than, you know, drag them to court or make it a big deal in the congregation. I'd rather just be defrauded and learn a lesson, right, than to make this a bigger deal than it needs to be. So again, talk about the spirit and the nature of sometimes we have to be the bigger brother in some of these instances. Look over in Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews 12, this kind of goes what what Dan was talking about earlier, Hebrews 12, 14 and 15. And it uses this idea of root of bitterness. Pursue peace with all men and sanctification without which no one will see the Lord. You see those two things? Pursue peace and sanctification without which no one will see the Lord. Not going to happen. Just so you know, you've been warned. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble and by it be defiled. How many of you have ever worked with blackberries? Blackberry bushes? Blackberries. Nobody? Love blackberries, by the way. Blackberry cobbler, one of my faves, okay? Getting, some of you are nodding your head, you know what I'm talking about. But getting the blackberries, it's, you know, can be managing, they have stickers. It's worth it, though. But managing blackberries, have you ever cut down blackberries? What happens the next spring? Whoop, they grow right back up. As long as there's a root, it's going to come back. Is there conflict situations like that? I've dealt with it. I've dealt with it. But have you really dealt with it? There's that root of bitterness that's there. And it starts growing again. We need to deal with conflict. Because sometimes I'm just going to bury it. That proverbial hatchet. I'm going to bury it. And not think about it. But then it comes up again. Sometimes what we do when we're talking to ourselves about should I talk to them or should I not, is a thing happens once, all right? This offense they do, it happens once, and you're like, oh, maybe it was an accident, maybe they didn't know, maybe it was this, and then you're kind of like, I can deal with that, I'm going to let that slide, right? Pretend it never happened. But then it happens again, and you're like, wait a second, I thought this was a one-time thing. Surely they know that this shouldn't be the case. And now you start thinking, should I go talk to them now or not? Do you see where we're going with this? At some point, they need to be talked to. Because either they're doing it on accident and they have no idea what's going on, or they're doing it on purpose. Either way, they need to be talked to, right? It needs to be dealt with. Otherwise, it's this root of bitterness that's just going to keep springing up, and it destroys that relationship with that person. It destroys it. Yes, your worship, like everything is thrown off whack when you have that kind of situation happening. So it is important that we deal with things when they come. It's at your discretion at what level, you know, what DEFCON level you get to before you deal with it. But I would suggest we do it soon, and we do it quickly. Because generally in those situations, it's generally somebody just didn't know and didn't do it on purpose. And if they did it on purpose, don't give them a chance to do it again. All right? We just deal with it when it's small and little and deal with those things. I want to go to 1 Corinthians. Let's just, the Romans 12 we kind of talked about last time, but it's good here as well. I want to go to 1 Corinthians, this love, the love chapter, right? And talk about this for a second in dealing with conflict. And then hopefully we have time to get to his conflict model real quickly. All right, when we deal with, look, I want you just to read 1 Corinthians 13 and these few passages. Love is patient when wronged. Love does not brag or is arrogant. Does not act unbecomingly. Does not seek its own when wronged. Is not provoked easily. It doesn't take into account a wrong suffered. Does not rejoice in unrighteousness. Oh, I'm so glad that happened to them. They deserved it. But rejoices in the truth. Bears all things. Believes all things. Hopes all things. Endures all things. Can you see how love in the context of conflict? Love is going to think the best of others. Love is going to want what's best for others. Love is going to be patient with others when it's hard. Love is going to say, yes, I forgive you, even, you know, I forgave you for this last week, but I will do it again. Love is what's going to do this. Does not act unbecomingly. It just, these things, when we start looking at love in this way, it gets hard. Love can be difficult. It is not just a pretty little thing to read at a wedding, right? This was here to deal with real life. Not that say at a wedding is not real life, but you understand what I'm saying, right? When at a wedding, you're all Twitter-pated, and you know it doesn't matter what you say, you're going to forget it anyway. But when it gets difficult, you know, after the honeymoon's over, that's when you need to go back and read this. Love is patient during conflict. Love wants what's best. But there's a lot of amens over there, Giselle. I don't know if there's, you know, I know. We'll talk later. Okay. That's what, but bears also, these are things that we need to think about in dealing with conflict. I want what's best for my brother or sister. I want what's best for the congregation. I want what's best for the cause of Christ. You understand? Like, okay. Let's quickly go to, you know, time to get to the things. We had some proverbs about conflict. Let's quickly go over to, I don't know the number. I'd have you skip ahead. There it is, picture. All right, everybody loves pictures. Okay, so conflict model. Do y'all see this? Can y'all read that? This is great. I found this. I didn't make this. I found it. When we're looking at this model, this is a process that we go through. There's a tension, the initial conflict. There's the role dilemma, like whose fault is this? And we start thinking about it's their fault, you know, and we start going through that, you know, concept in our minds. And then we start gathering injustices. We start looking at things that they did wrong and building our case against them and maybe bringing in other people. And then a lot of times that's where it stops, that we don't actually go and talk to the person. Because then we got, if we're going to continue down this process, we have to confront them and talk to them. Now, this is what happens. I'm not saying this is a biblical model. I'm just saying this is what typically happens in conflict. And then you confront them, and there's this adjusting period. And in that adjustment period, it can either, you know, the ostrich approach, I'm out of here, I'm not going to deal with it. You know, I don't care what you think. I'm just going to do this. This is what I'm going to do. I'm out of here. No resolution whatsoever. Maybe there are those things bring up other issues. There's further tensions because of this, and we got to go through around the horn again and talk about these kind of things. Or they're, you know, maybe you think, well, I don't have enough evidence. It's like, well, you know, and they got to go back through this process again and deal with it. Or there's actual resolution, and you go through this. But we're looking for actual mutual beneficial resolution and growth is what we're looking for. That doesn't always happen because this is a situation where two people are involved. And as much as lies within me, I must do my part in resolving this. This may also have to acknowledge that maybe I had some wrong. I'm not saying you come to a resolution or come to a conflict scenario and you're completely, like, you're completely 100% innocent. Like, I didn't do anything. We may need to acknowledge that maybe I should have come to you sooner. Or maybe there are some things that I need to acknowledge my part in whatever the conflict is. Because it takes two to tango, right? It takes two to have conflict. And I need to acknowledge my part. But they may or may not acknowledge theirs, and that may become the issue of if it's really a good outcome or not. So you understand this is the cycle, and a lot of times we stop before we actually get to the confrontation about it, and we are stuck in this gathering injustices against them, and we vilify that individual and destroy relationships because we never take the next step. And trusting God and trusting our brother and loving them enough to actually talk to them about it. And that's what it comes down to sometimes, that we don't love them enough to do that. Here are some things that when conflict happens, what do I take away from this? What are my takeaways? I might need to talk with somebody tonight or soon. How do I deal with conflict? It could be better. Maybe I've learned something I could do better with my conflict. Am I vilifying anybody right now? Right? Am I doing that right now? How is my communication? Am I communicating my needs? Am I being an advocate for myself? Would I be considered a peacemaker? Blessed are the peacemakers, right? Would I be considered a peacemaker, or am I making this a bigger issue than it needs to be? Am I using conflict as a weapon and getting what I want? Have you seen that? There are certain people who are, like, completely comfortable with conflict, and they come into a room like a battering ram. We call them closers, right? Closers in the business world. And they're completely confident with conflict, and they use it to their own gain and use it as a weapon. And we need to be honest with ourselves. And we can learn we can be assertive. We can say, you know, I hear what you're saying, but it makes me feel this way when this happens. It's completely okay for me to say something in an appropriate way. It's completely okay for me to be my own advocate and say, I whatever this tension is, it made me feel this way. I recognize maybe this about it, but I think we need to talk about it. These things need to happen, and we will be better for it when we're doing it the right way. But if we ostrich, we bottle, we don't deal with anything, we are weaker for it. As a community, as a congregation, we're weaker if we're not dealing with things like we should. Thank you very much for your time tonight. I hope you have a good rest of your week.